97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
Weaver of Context, Caroline Casey. So, food, yes, if you know somebody who eats food or you eat food yourself, then this is for you. GMOs, climate change, carbon, and oceans, absolutely. So, we are welcoming our incredibly lucid narrative guide, trustworthy guide to food safety, John Rulak. He is the founder and CEO of Nutiva, organic hemp, coconut, chia, red palms, superfoods, nutiva.com, as we explore just first a little bit of tidbits here. We have spring has sprung, so we say trickster is the keeper of democracy. Really, revelation, autonomy, transparency, you know, all of those things are crucial. And spring, of course, is dedication to emerging life. So welcome, John Rulak.
Good to be here, Carolyn. Thank you for having me on the show.
Absolutely. And then just for the astro mytho political, Saturn is stationing on Good Friday. Saturn just says, you know, all moments of time await our dedication to animate the desirable story. So critique and solution. So let's dive in. I know that you feel ardently about the DARC Act, which is deny Americans the right to know on genetically modified food labeling, and guide us into that. But also of immediate concern, you know, Obama just left his historic 2-day visit to Cuba, and many of us go, Cuba, oh, Cuba, no GMO foods, due to the benefits of isolation in some way, no Roundup Ready, no whatever. So protection for Cuba. How do we keep Cuba safe from the horrors of American food production?
Yeah, that's a real concern, as many people may realize, because of some of the embargoes in Cuba. They've been an experiment in more organic, regenerative agriculture, not using industrial agricultural chemicals. And so the concern now is that they may drop that for, quote, the new and improved American and European petrochemical pesticides, herbicides, chemical fertilizers. So that's going to be something that we need to look at. And of course, they're going to be starting to look to export American grown, GMO corn, soybeans, commodity crops to kind of flood the market in Cuba.
Right. And, you know, I was at a number of Goldman Awards where the head of Cuban agriculture was awarded because they do, you know, seed sharing and diversity. And we want to honor this idea of diversity. And then as you guide us into the complexity of, America's, legislative complex relationship there, in which we now are really in favor of states' rights. So guide us into that too, which is, Vermont has a GMO labeling law, right?
Yes, correct. The fine state of Vermont about a year and a half ago or two passed a state initiative to require all foods that contain genetically engineered foods to be put on labels, and the due date on that is July 1, 2016. That's when it's scheduled to go into effect. And ever since then, there's been a variety of maneuvers from Monsanto and the biotech industry. So they tried lawsuits, they failed at that, and now they're trying what they call the DARC Act, and it's a bill that's been passed in the House, and there's a lot of political maneuvering in the Senate to pass legislation that essentially would exempt and prevent any states or local jurisdictions from having any GMO laden requirements and go for a quote, some sort of compromise where there might be a QR code, but people wouldn't even know what that's on there, why that's on there. So there's a lot of things going on there. And there was a fact, there was a bill, and they needed 60 votes to move forward. And this was done a week ago, and it was like 49-48 to turn it down.
Right. Yes. Again, last week, Congress unable to advance the bill banning states from establishing their own GMO labeling. And your sense of ardency right now as you go, the Dementors are going to rise up again and try and push it through, because there was a moment of feeling some victory at that point from sane, reverent people going, and then you're going, no, don't let down guard. They're relentless, the Dementors, right?
Yeah. I mean, I mean, the agricultural industry, global agricultural commodity industry, is like a $1 trillion a year, and they really like being able to use GMOs because what people don't realize is GMOs reduces the Roundup Ready crops reduces the labor cost for big scale farming, because they can just spray the crops right over, and the crops don't die because they're designed to take in this toxic poison Roundup and not die from it. But it impacts a variety of things in soils, and we'll talk about that in the link to oceans in a bit here. So agriculture, industrial agriculture, wants to maintain this. At the same time, though, consumers are saying we don't want it. So there's a push for the larger brands are losing sales that sell the GMOs. So it's kind of this push between Monsanto on one hand and consumers and doctors and health advocates on the other. And in the middle is this labeling issue. So they're expecting what we call the Dark Act 2 to come up in early April. And we're encouraging everyone to call 877, this toll-free number, 877-796-1949. The joke on the Facebook post is, are your senators Roundup ready, just like they have soy Roundup ready? Are they Roundup ready to take their rights away, or what are they going to do? So call this number and encourage them to not support Senator Roberts' bill to prevent this Vermont law going into effect July 1, 2016.
Right. And, of course, what the companies want is, well, we'll go for voluntary labeling, wink, wink. It's like, no. So it is all wrapped up in the dynamic of now of, democracy emerging, may it be so, versus tyranny, and certainly information, freedom, autonomy decisions, pretty crucial. But it's also, against all odds kind of time going, well, yay, Vermont. And revelation is the nutrient for democracy. But so in the plethora of articles you sent me, which is wonderful, we go, okay, trickster is the keeper of democracy. Again, you say 90% of consumers want labeling. There we go. And then there's some big companies that, God knows, we probably really wouldn't want to eat their food anyway, but they've gone along. Again, guide me and correct me, but General Mills is like okay with labeling. ConAgra is like okay with labeling. Campbell's Soup is okay with labeling. Mars, maybe. I don't know. Is that right?
Yes, there's been a plethora of big companies. The first one, which had the most leadership and took the best position, was Campbell's. Campbell's is really, they've seen their market share, just like the other ones, erode in the last 5 years, 10 years, because people are not interested in eating, industrial foods so much that have been industrialized. Instead, they want to eat more real foods. So they came out in January where they were gonna, they've agreed that they're gonna on their label, on their soups, label what foods contain GMOs, contain genetically engineered ingredients, and that they support a national bill that's clear to consumers. That was a big break from the Grocery Manufacturers Association, or GMA, which is the one that's doing all the lobbying in Washington, D.C. to prevent Americans from knowing what's in their food. And then, so that was a big breakthrough, and partly it's this, it's coming because of this is consumer driven. Individuals interested in their food and using social media and contacting their politicians and voting with their dollars when you go into the grocery store or natural food store. So that's what's driving this. And then General Mills made a big announcement last week, and it's been followed by Mars and ConAgra, so, and even Kellogg's. Now they've not taken as strong a position as Campbell's, but they say that they're gonna go ahead and label to meet the dark to meet the Vermont law. But if the Vermont law is exempt and it's overridden by the U.S. Senate, then they can fall back and go, oh, see, we were gonna follow the law, we were gonna label, but now it's the law. We just go back. It can be a voluntary thing. Anybody wants to volunteer, and if companies want to do that, but we're not gonna do that. So this is a crunch time. So that's why it's important people to call the toll free number 877-796-1949 and let your senators know to oppose the Senator Roberts DARK Act, which would not require mandatory labeling for foods grown with genetically engineered ingredients in the United States. So it's a big thing, and it's interesting to see the progression. And I think it might be worthwhile just kind of us to review how we've gotten here. I mean, GMOs started in the late 1990s. There was definitely some few campaigns around GMOs in you know 2000 to 2010 11, but it was never a major movement. It was very fledgling. And I remember in 2012 it was still pretty fledgling GMO food movement. We've come so far in the last 4 years. At the time we were looking to pass the Prop 37 in California, and that really seemed to galvanize the movement of non-GMOs here in America. And of course we lost that campaign, and one of the things you know, I was on your radio show in 2012 or 2013 saying that I didn't think we were going to win that campaign, and we ended up losing by I think about 52-48. So I created with Green America the GMO Inside, and it was kind of a playoff of Intel Inside. So we created this campaign, and our first target was General Mills. So we went after their Cheerios, and we put 50,000 comments on their Facebook wall, and they agreed to remove GMOs from the product just on that one single simple you know Cheerio. So that was the beginning of more movements, and we put pressure on Hershey's. We won
Let's just pause to underline and honor that, which is because we're. You know, we're talking about labeling, but it's just labeling, team, not even banning, but you, or the team persuaded, General Mills to eliminate GMOs. I just want to underline that.
Yes.
From Cheerios.
Okay. Yes, exactly. And the funny part was, is I remember after the campaign, and they were, the reason why I picked them because they put a lot of money into the campaign, and their CEO was very vocal on why we didn't need a labeling act, and why GMOs were completely safe, and all these, you know, and that, you know, we didn't have to worry about Roundup, et cetera. And so we chose them, and ironically on the cereal box right at that time, just in November, they printed on all their cereal boxes, share with us how you love Cheerios right on the box, and they had a whole campaign on social media and PR. Tell us how you use Cheerios. And I remember it was so ironic because we just used that, and it was perfect timing. And then when we had everybody share about, like, well, we wish you'd just, you know, have Cheerios without GMOs. So it was like they kind of handed it to us on a silver platter, and that really had the momentum. And since then, we've had more victories, and more campaigns, around this. But the bottom line is, if everyone buys food that contains GMOs and we don't vote with our dollars, they're going to keep making it. And if we stop buying that, they're going to shift. And that's what's happened. Their sales of all the major food companies are down. General Mills sales continue to drop with their cereals, and the companies that the brands that they have are organic, such as Annie's, which General Mills bought, which, by the way, you know, I've met with their CEO, and he's inside working to change how they focus on food in General Mills, and they're now starting. They want to double the organic acres that they purchase, and so you know, I still don't like General Mills as a corporation in terms of supporting you know, more, you know, the pesticide rules, and you know, they're slowly getting into this labeling thing, but other divisions inside are working to change it. So it's a kind of an interesting milieu of how organizations and change comes in society.
Right. No, and thank you for bringing your dedicated lucidity and complex maturity to the table, because I think it is part of what we all want to cultivate, which is complexity, which is discourage that, encourage the good thing, going, hey, no, not that, but yes, good, you know, organic guy buried within General Mills, there, yeah, there you go, right. So, inch by inch, life's a cinch, yard by yard, life is hard. So, yeah, every tiny little guiding step is good. But I know you've been an indefatigable educator for such a long time, but just to keep, you know, keep what we carry with us, because so many people, there's, you know, Bill Gates and high science guys, the con is if you're against GMOs, you want to starve Africa. And we want to step into the circle with that, going, what are your dedication to, you know, safe food for all? Good, what a good idea. And then we kind of work our way back out of that. And it is Claire Cummings who years ago came up with the metaphor with biologists, because so many scientists say we've always done this. And the metaphor of GMO, she says, might be like cutting our mythological DNA, our story, our ancestral connection to guidance. And the scientists go, yeah, that's exactly right. Does that make sense that we're cutting our connection with GMOs?
Yeah, well the fans at Monsanto and other companies, they like to say that we've always been genetically engineering our foods. And it is an outright lie. It's just, you know, if you tell a lie enough, maybe people will believe it. And the reality is we've been doing, you know, hybrid and, you know, crossing, you know, one type of apricot for another apricot. You know, we're not inserting a toxic pesticide, you know, with a gene gun. We're literally making corn now. When beetles, you know, eat or an insect eats the corn, it goes in, splits the, you know, the, you know, ruptures the digestive tract of the insect. I mean, this is, we've never done this before. And, if you look at actually what the FDA scientists who in back in the 80s when they were looking and reviewing the application around, introducing GMO foods, you know, into America, many of them said, this is going to bring up potential concerns around allergen issues. And that we really need to do, they need to do a long-term study, you know, a couple year study, and assess this. And of course, a lot of the scientists in the FDA were ignored, and they came out with a different report that was from a political appointee. I'm sure you can bet your bottom dollar that Monsanto and Dow, et cetera, were involved in that. And now, of course, do we have any allergen issues that have appeared in America in the last 40 years? Now, do we know it's exactly because of GMOs? We don't know that for sure. But let's get real. Did anyone have peanut when you went to, you know, school in America in the 1960s or 70s? Nobody had, you could bring peanut butter. There's no issue around that. And now everyone's allergic to peanuts. How many people, you think people were worrying about gluten-free bread, you know, 30, 40 years ago? But for some reason, that's completely skyrocketed in the last, you know, few decades. And so something is completely wrong with our food. I mean, here's another stat. The number one leading cause of death in children today is cancer. You know, autism is on the rise. So something is severely wrong. And I would like to point out when I give presentations is why do you think that the Harvard, Yale, UC Davis, all these great medical institutions, the National Academy of Sciences, why are they not investigating where we used to have 1 in 10,000 kids were autistic? You could barely even, you know, it was hardly that trackable in the 1960s. And today, you know, one out of, you know, 55 boys, babies are male babies are autistic. You know, why all this is going on? Is there any, you would think with such a crisis going on, where 25% of all kids today are technically obese?
So, but I can hear the grumpy scientists in the background, the corporate scientists may be going, but there's absolutely no proof, Mr. Rulak, of what any of the link between it. Yes, it does absolutely call for inquiry, and I just want to weave it into, you know, part of our larger discernment, you know, which is, you know, here's, you know, dominance, dominate nature, dominate the world, the con, you know, people snookered into polarity and fighting each other, empire going down, which is all about dominance and control. And what's rising up is, you know, the renaissance of humans being willing to cooperate, democracy with each other, but with nature's guiding genius. So the GMO foods are, you know, kind of quintessential dominance. We're going to put, you know, mackerel genes in this tomato because we're unsupervised and we can. There we go. And, you know, again, a complete kind of dominant dynamic. So the colonialism empire versus cooperate with nature is, you know, is everywhere and certainly right here. So when people call the 877-796-1949 number, that is a link to our elected representatives. Is that what that number does?
It starts out, it instructs a couple what to do, and then it prompts you, and you can go right link to your senator. So it's a point you can call, and then it gives you information on what to do next. I did want to mention about a new technology in GMOs. That is very disconcerting. It's called CRISPR, and this is a new novel way to genetically modify organisms very rapidly, very simply. In fact, the Pentagon and the U.S. military recently considered it part of weapons of mass destruction that put in the wrong hands can cause significant damage. So it allows you to go in, you know, through gene editing and turn on or off genes willy-nilly, like, you know, a PhD, you know, 22-year-old PhD candidate, you know, with a computer and some knowledge can start to do some of these things now. So, and part of the plan by the food industry is they're going to exempt this. So this is really important for people to understand. So they're going to try to define that GMOs are when you take like another gene, like a fish gene or like a carrot and put it into a celery. That's going to only be, but if you just go into wheat and you turn off one gene or you turn on another gene, then that won't be considered genetic engineering, even though it is. And that's the next big battle. So, they're, you know, and it's like in chess. So there's a few chess moves ahead, but it's coming rapidly. And what the concern is, the scientists will say, oh, you can just turn off this one gene. And look, that's going to be good. It's going to reduce this rust issue. But the thing is, we know so little about when you turn on or off one or two genes, how this works on the whole, and what impacts doing that will impact here, and how that impacts our digestion of we've been consuming food, you know, for thousands and thousands of years grown in a traditional way, and now all of a sudden you're introducing food, that you're turning on and off genes, and you know, there's a real concern. You talk there's a great new site called GMO Science, and you know, some of the medical doctors are saying they're seeing this massive uptick in digestive issues for people, especially in their 20s and 30s, and they don't understand what's causing this. So something's going on with our food. We need to take a look at this. So be aware of CRISPR. It's a new technology that's coming to a grocery store very soon, without being labeled as well.
Right. And it's such an annoying conniption fit inducing name, CRISPR. It's like, no, you can't have that word. Oh God. But I want to also go back and underline something you said, which is important for all of us to ponder. You're guiding us to understand the relationship between GMO food and gluten intolerance. That would the implication be that it might not be gluten intolerance exactly? I mean, that organic, beautiful wheat grown with, you know, might be all right for people. It's the GMO messing with it all. Is that what you mean?
There's many different theories on it. Many people are concerned about also it may be the Roundup, the amount of Roundup that's been sprayed in on our food has skyrocketed. And you have to understand Roundup, which is owned by Monsanto. Glyphosate is the common name. So a little to understand about that. One is it was originally developed as a degreaser to a demineralizer. It's a chelator, basically strips minerals from industrial tanks for like calcium buildup and other mineral buildup. So you put it in there and we just pull that away. So it strips minerals from industrial processes. So the hypothesis is it's helping block the uptake of minerals, The challenge is a lot of universities, there's different studies that are starting to come out here and there. You're seeing certain concerns about it. But of course, if you were in Iowa State and said, hey, we want to do a study with feeding pigs with GMOs and then feeding pigs non-GMO food, should we be able to get that study? And, you know, the chair's going to go, don't you understand that the biotech industry is funding like 50% of research and that's kind of speculative? It's not going to be really too good for your career. So kind of an Orwellian fashion, the industrial agriculture has really diverted the dollar, and they're really controlling and influencing a lot of research in agriculture today. And so it's unfortunate. So here's an interesting statistic that I read recently. It said that and look at Finland and people right on the other side of Finland, that people in Finland had four times the amount of gluten intolerance issues versus people who are on the other side of the border in Russia. You know, so it could be a variety of different things.
But is Finland, more swamped with GMOs? That would be something.
Yeah, well, yes. The one thing that people understand is Europe is flooded with GMOs for meat and milk. So the vast majority of all the meat and milk produced in Europe, they gave an exemption there. So, and that's the majority of crops. So even though Europe is not consuming, let's say, GMO canola oil, but when they, so there's a rising concern about that. So they're importing GMO grains from America and Brazil to feed to their chickens. But now Germany, the supermarket, retailers association just required that all the feed for the chicken not be GMO. So that was a big victory there. And then also with Roundup, of course, the World Health Organization found that there's a probable link to cancer to Roundup. And now Prop 65 in the state of California is starting to consider listing anything grown with Roundup. Here's another issue that is starting to, people are not as aware of. Crops that are non-GMO, such as, let's say, wheat and oats, many of the farmers, before they harvest a crop, they do a kill step where they spray the Roundup about a week before they harvest. They let the plant die, and then they can have more even harvesting, more efficiencies there. And some of the largest millers of, let's say, oats. So when you buy non-organic oats, it could be doused in Roundup the week before it's harvested. And so some of these millers are starting to change that. So it's, again, an importance why we should be choosing certified organic foods to know your farmer and not get this. And one last kind of dastardly thing that they do, Monsanto does, whenever they submit safety studies, they submit glyphosate as a single ingredient. But when they sell it to you, when you buy it at the corner store, at the garden store to spray in your weeds, if you're doing that, and I know many people still spray Roundup, which is not a good thing to do. It's a popular herbicide in America, and the farmers. But when they do the studies, they just submit it as a single ingredient. But then they put these adjuncts and other cofactors in there, and those are much more toxic. But the studies and showing the toxicity level is not done on the final kind of witch's brew of toxic witch's brew of all these other cofactors, which can really harm our bodies. And the other thing they're finding is even smaller amounts of Roundup is more toxic than maybe a little more, less is more. Sometimes it's a very challenging issue, and you know, round of being found in our water, you know, it's really kind of a I think a signal from the universe is that. We just thought we could just spray Roundup, we could spray, you know, use modern chemistry and ignore the health of the earthworms, ignore the health of the soils, and somehow everything's going to be okay. And we really need to step back from that. And, the silver lining in all this is we're now got to take responsibility for this, and the awareness is growing about these important issues about how we grow our food and what's considered healthy or not.
That's great. There is a rising up with the likes of ourselves and our fabulous dedicated listenership again that can call. You can contact your representatives at 877-796-1949 to voice your, you know, concern and encourage to not support what is the efficient way of communicating? To not support
is to oppose Senator Roberts' Senate bill that would prevent mandatory labeling of GMOs on foods. So we're going to oppose Senator Roberts, and if you call the number, it'll explain to you. And also, I encourage people to go to the GMO Inside Facebook page. That's the full disclosure. That's the NGO that I founded with Green America in 2012, and we have several hundred thousand. 257,000, I think now, followers on Facebook. And if you want to kind of follow that and find articles and the latest updates, you can go on there and follow us, like us on there. So it's important to stand up here and let's win this battle.
Right. Well, or change the metaphor, grow this garden.
Yeah.
Remind us again of the Facebook name of your group.
GMO Inside. Yeah, GMO Inside.
Right, it's wonderfully ambiguous, that name. GMO Inside.
Yeah, kind of like Intel. It's a playoff of Intel Inside.
Right.
So we wanted to let all these companies that love using GMOs, they can feel proud. So we've labeled the companies that don't want people to know there's GMOs in it, and so we can let everybody know about it.
Right. No, that's great. And also, just several miles back, I want to just applaud your fabulous use of the word dastardly. Like Snidely Whiplash. We want a plethora of, you know, of words and language and liveliness, diversity in order to serve diversity. So anyway, that's great. Dastardly, what a good thing. We're right at the season in a sense where literally and metaphorically we're kind of emerged from the winter and into this realm of animation right now. Let's go. So it is good for you to be encouraging and exhorting us to take action on our ideals. It's the perfect time for that. And everything's related. No isolated crisis of isolation. So you said, of course, the glyphosate. Yes, very sneaky, spraying it on crops before harvest. Oh, so mean. But of course, as you said, it goes into the water. All right, now we're going into the watery realms because we will to and fro, but your strong concern to direct our collective attention to the crash of sardines and the implication for all of our water kin for that. So we can to and fro, but let's put your concern for sardines on our council table here.
It ties into the oceans and the soil and climate change, which is an area that I've focused in on over the last couple of years and have written a series of articles in EcoWatch. So for people who want to learn more, you can just Google my name, John Rulac, Roulac, and EcoWatch, and see some of the articles there. I've got a lot of good feedback, and my sense is that while this GMO labeling is a very important thing, it's our right to know what's in our food, but the next area of focus that is much more important besides just whether there's GMOs in it is the relationship between healthy soils, healthy oceans, and climate change. And sadly, the climate groups have been so focused on saying that, you know, saying carbon, bad, you know, coal burn, you know, all that carbon that we have, it's bad. We need to get rid of it. And of course, you know, we want to move from coal burning power plants to solar and wind and not dig up more fossil fuels and you know, indigenous lands across the world and in the Amazon, which Amazon Watch is doing a lot of great work on to protect. So, but we've been focusing so much on saying, don't do this, don't burn more carbon, and we got to switch to green energy, a high-tech solution, and that's 50% of the solution. But what are we going to do with all this carbon now in the atmosphere? And many people don't understand that the majority of the carbon in the atmosphere now is, or close to a majority, it's a very high percentage, 35, 40, 50% in that range, is from agriculture. And so agriculture actually contributes more to CO2 release than Chevron and Exxon and transportation industry combined. So the good news about this issue and what's going to climate change, we literally can take what we think is bad, carbon, and it's really a resource when we return it back into the soil and build soil quality through regenerative agricultural practices. And when we do that, we now get more water holding capacity in the soil, so it conserves water and holds it during drier times, and it also increases the nutrition of the soil, the nutrient density, so we have higher quality food, more nutrients in our food, and less need for fertilizer. And so it's such a simple process, but the question is, will us complex, thinking humans take a simple concept of, oh, it's climate change, there's more CO2 in the atmosphere, the oceans are starting to rise, the Greenland is melting. Well, what are we going to do? And we fly off to these events and say, well, we need to have more solar and wind in, 2025. Well, we can't wait until 2025 or 2030 before we make some significant changes. Many people are saying we have, there's a recent study with Dr. James Hansen just came out. We have less than a decade. We have a window which we can pass through this kind of vortex and make a significant change. And right now we're at 400 parts per million. We're on the way to 450. And ironically, again, the environmental movement, the media, scientists, for most part, are not talking that we have a simple, elegant solution where we can take that carbon, put it into the soil, and within a decade we can go to 350 parts per million. And some people might say, well, how do we do that? Why haven't I heard about this? And I said the same thing a couple of years ago, there's a great new project that Paul Hawken is working on called Carbon Drawdown, and it's listing some of the top 100 things we can do, and the research that Paul Hawken, founder of Smith & Hawken and speaker of Bioneers, and he's shown that he was surprised that many of the top solutions are biological, soil-based in nature and not necessarily so high-tech. And so, for instance, composting, increasing the grass on a rangelands through better grazing practices, diversifying the crops, doing agroforestry. In Brazil, they're doing phenomenal agroforestry. These are all ways to return that carbon. And where it ties into the sardines is, when we put all this carbon up in the atmosphere, what happens to some of that carbon? Does it just sit up there? It falls. No, a lot of it's falling. It falls into the ocean. So the ocean's absorbed up to a third of the carbon that we produced. And also, the oceans are getting hotter, so absorbing the heat and carbon. And the oceans are maxed out. There's only one out of the three major carbon sinks, when we consider, basic. You got the atmosphere, you have the oceans, and you have the soils, and then of course you have down below, you have the oil and hydrocarbon reserves. But of these simple three ones we're talking about, the only one we can put it is the soil. So by putting the carbon back into the soil, we can take the pressure off the oceans, because right now the oceans are becoming acidic from all this carbon.
Well, is that a primary contribution to the crashing of the sardine population, which some of the articles you sent?
Yes. Right now the oceans maybe many of us have understood and read about how the sea lions are been starving to death in the West Coast. Well, here's a quote from Oceana Marine Conservation Group. Fishermen with the sardine population is going to be down by 93%. And the sardines are an incredibly important economic and ecological ocean resource. Marine animals like California sea lion pups will face another year of fighting starvation. So it's down 93% from 2007. So what's happening is the plankton is dying every year. So there's less and less plankton because they need it's the ocean's getting too hot and it's becoming acidic, and also shellfish are impacting. So the oceans, we're literally, we through industrial agriculture, we are killing our oceans. We are reducing its capacity. And again, nature is very very abundant. Nature is very very regenerative. So if we can force oceans a break and pull that carbon into the soil, and more scientists are and the French government has an initiative on this called a 1004 initiative announced at the Paris Climate Talks. We have very good solutions. Carbon underground, kiss the ground, are some of Regeneration International or some of the websites people can go for resources to learn about how we can do this. And so we literally have this window of this next 10 years to start focusing more on regenerative agriculture so we actually improve the carbon in the soil, the tilth of the soil. There's shown now that farmers in a little matter of 5 years can increase their organic matter from 2 or 3% to 5%, and then that stores this important carbon matter into the soil and locks it up there instead of floating in the atmosphere and leading to more intense climate change.
Right, so it is neck and neck, sanity and sane beauty and devastation. Yeah, and I was just at Diana Beresford's Kroger wonderful Call of the Forest dynamic last Saturday in Point Reyes. But she was also just delineating, as you know, and can further extrapolate undoubtedly the health of the forest and how there are, nutrients in the forest that wash into the sea that are essential for oysters, essential for shellfish, going, okay, the forest thing. And so when we cut down the forest on the edge of the water, fresh water and ocean, again, it's, yes, knowledge, humans, it's good to be informed in all kinds of ways, but, and encouraging the planting of local trees. And, as she says, even again, inch by inch, each person who plants a tree, one tree a year, even for the next 7 years, that'll help. Just keep going. So yeah, there is all of that, but that 93% sardine population down since 2007, and the articles and yourself make the point that if we could just take the kind of jackboot of human rudeness off of the jugular pulse of nature's life, it would rebound. It's just the relentless, I guess the other factors with the sardines is all that you've mentioned and the necessity of complex understanding, but then the voracious overfishing, is that part of that?
Yeah, the overfishing is part of it, and the pollution in the ocean. So it's a combination of factors. But National Geographic reported a scientific study by 2046, there won't be one fish in the ocean left by 2046, because of some of these factors. So, Bucky Fuller gave us a metaphor that being on spaceship Earth, it's like we're on a spaceship. Earth is a spaceship. We're hurtling through space. And what if somebody came to you and said, the way that we're growing food on this spaceship is impacting our oxygen tanks, our oxygen systems? I think you would, since you're on a spaceship and there's no plan B, you got all bets on living on this spaceship, you'd want to go and look at how are we doing this, what are we doing about how we're growing food that's destroying our oxygen tanks, our oxygen systems, and how do we change that? And literally, industrial agriculture, as we know it, is doing that. So every time we purchase food from industrial agriculture that's not regenerative organic agriculture, and especially meat and milk, because they're the worst offenders, industrial meat and milk, we are supporting to destroy our oxygen system on the planet as a metaphor. It's as simple as that. And ironically, we can actually use cattle in a regenerative process. A lot of people have a hard time understanding that, but you can actually help increase grass, the root structure in grass. And the largest landmass we have in America is not farmland; it's rangeland. And there's a lot of good projects. The Marine Carbon Project has been working on that, actually spreading some compost on rangelands and showing there. And UC Berkeley is doing a lot of research. So cutting out and being a vegetarian is a great thing to do. But if you are going to eat meat, make sure I recommend people eat about half or two thirds less. And then when you do eat it, make sure it's regenerative, from 100% pasture grass systems and not from industrial CAFOs where they're feeding GMO corn and soybeans. The other thing I wanted to mention, Caroline, is I'm going to be speaking in Petaluma on April 14th from 7 to 8:30 at the Seed Bank in Petaluma, and it's part of a 3-part series on carbon farming, and I'm going to kick that off and talk a little about what people can do at their home through composting and growing some of your local foods, and also tying into the ocean as well. So people in that area may want to attend that, and there'll be some great speakers on this series, it's tied in through the Daily Acts, which is a Petaluma nonprofit that works on making good daily choices around the environment and our health of our planet.
That's great. And also, too, so how people can remember that and find out more about that, is there a web link?
It just got set up. I think if you go to Daily Acts, but it's at the Seed Bank in Petaluma, which is a business at 7 o'clock on Thursday, April 14th. So I think it's on the Daily Acts as well.
Right. And then for we have our Bay Area, we have our Los Angeles, we have our global listeners. All of this is important. And I think, you know, as agents of local and global democracy, the more we know, the better informed. And I'm also grateful for your nuance, because I think part of our team, you know, when you say cattle can be part of regenerative, you know, root structure, again, as long as they're moving, as long as there's a kind of a faux predator that would keep them moving, that's okay. And you yourself are a vegan, which is all perfectly wonderful. But so many people go, okay, this film, it's about, you know, cows are the fundamental problem, and you can't call yourself an environmentalist. Anyway, I just want to invite our team to adopt the informed, lucid, calm dynamic of our guest, John Rulak, you know, so that one can have nuance going, here's my preference and here's the thing, you know, so, because it's not one single thing to fixate and finger wag, which is highly ineffective in an educational process, right?
Yeah, and I had an interesting conversation with John Robbins, and who's a longtime vegetarian diet for New America, and you know, we had a good conversation about how he feels like if you are going to eat meat, you know, which he is opposed, he says, but if we can do that in a way that regenerates, you know, soils and things, that's a better option. And so, you know, that's kind of being pragmatic and not kind of trying to it's not everything is black and white as some of our politicians like to make. It's important for us to do this, but it's we need to learn to bring this carbon back in the soil. We can do it, but if not, then as the oceans, you know, the if we like to breathe oxygen, we're going to need to take care of the oceans. That's two thirds of the oxygen for the planet, and right now we're slowly degrading the ocean systems because of all the carbon, excess carbon, and the plastics, et cetera. But the carbon is a big thing, and then there's this whole plankton, this algae bloom that's more of an algae bloom, and that's going all over the place. It's like 10 times bigger than California, and it's been causing a lot of issues this past summer. So there's these are things that scientists are really baffled by, and so it's a great change going on this planet, and in some ways it can be depressing because we're seeing nature change so fast in front of us. At the same time, it's an opportunity for us to be lucky that we're alive right now and enjoy each day, and then see what we can do to leave it for the next generation. And I tell the millennial generation, it's time for you guys to really step up, because otherwise you're going to leave it to our generation who hasn't really taken care of some of the problems we faced.
Although I am in favor of no age ghettos, it's got to be everybody step up. But and the sobering sentence that you said, that by 2046 there may be no fish in the ocean. Is there a reference for that where people can?
That was National Geographic. Yeah.
Really? Oh my God. Yeah. Nat Geo, and they're pretty corporate too. And that means no whales. Nothing.
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 Yeah. I mean, I tell people now, by 2060, if we go our current path, 90% of all species will be gone on the planet by 2060. We are being told a fairy tale by the media today about climate change. It's way worse than anybody is being told. If you lose the oceans, because the plankton are dying, when you don't have the plankton is what feeds the sardines. Sardines feeds the seals, feeds the salmon. Whales feed on that and feed on the plankton. We're destroying the basis of life on this planet through the oceans. So we need to be focused on the oceans. We need to learn about the oceans and take care of the oceans. Otherwise, we're heading for essentially what happened, millions of years ago when the oceans became so acidic, 90% of the species left the planet.
So, right, and then I just want to go, I want to reclaim the term fairy tale, not as a dissing, but as an honorific, because actually fairy tales were full of, if you cut down the forest, then the gods will kill you. But never mind that, moving on in our precious moments remaining. So it is good for us to be as lucid and calm and informed as the likes of yourself, rather than kind of spiky and strident and oppositional, which is not effective. And speaking of spiky and whatever, what about Hillary Clinton's connection to Monsanto?
the bride of Monsanto. Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton have been big fans of Monsanto. They helped get through a lot of the beginnings of industrial GMO agriculture. So it's not going to be a good situation. She actually is on record of saying how they shouldn't be talking about GMOs. They should say it's better, drought tolerant and better yield. That's what she told the biotech industry when she spoke there a couple of years ago. So the Obama administration has been very pro GMO, so don't expect the incumbent leadership to do the right thing. We have to. It's going to be a people's thing. Obviously, Bernie Sanders is a much stronger candidate from economic or agriculture point of view for what's going to be right for people. And he's not getting his funding from Wall Street. You got to hand to Bernie, whether he's going to win, lose, or draw, he has changed the debate in this country. He's done it classy. And I think we owe a lot of gratitude for Bernie and bringing up this dialogue and like how far he has come when I saw him a year and a half ago in Richmond when he came to spoke at my hometown. So hats off to him.
Yeah, no, it is impressive. And we want to remember that this is not a, election is not a sports game. We're electing flora fauna. That's flora fauna 2016. That it is an important ongoing theater for democracy of informing the likes of our wonderful ally John Rulak, going an information fest. Did you know? How about this? Come on. It is definitely a rousing wake up time. And also we're down to our final moments, but perhaps you could also allude to the FDA attempts to regulate CBDs in medical cannabis. Do you have anything on that?
The FDA has sent out warning letters of the last few months to companies selling CBD, and they're trying to take the position that CBDs are cannot be sold as a dietary supplement, that they can only be sold as a pharmaceutical drug, as a drug extract, and that will limit it only to the God's green medicine that grows in the land will only be available to pharmaceutical multinational corporations. And a lot of people are very upset about that, including the hemp industry. And now CBD has no psychoactive quality. It's essentially considered anti-marijuana. When you ingest CBD, it blocks the receptors to have any psychoactive effect. So it's different than CBD, which has a psychoactive effect. So a big battle around this, and also where the USDA just said it's that they will not certify organic hemp fields in America. So I flew to Kentucky, gave a talk on organic hemp in Kentucky, and so we're trying to change USDA policy because we can grow hemp in America, but we can't get it certified organic and go try to figure that one out. So a lot of opposition to hemp rising here in America, but we're at it. And as you know, we sued the DEA to keep hemp foods legal and won that case in 2004. So more trials and tribulations around the cannabis plant.
That's great. And again, people can, is nutiva.com your website? Is that a good source? Can you guide people to information from there?
Yes, nutiva.com and also votehemp.com are two great sites around hemp. And votehemp.com is a good NGO in Washington D.C. to help promote on that as well.
That's great. Well, always more ongoing conversation. You are always a great guest, John Rulak, and one of our living treasures of educational guidance. So thank you so much. And we will keep the conversation going. The more informed we are, the better vehicles we are for actual democracy. I'm Caroline Casey, CoyoteNetworkNews.com. And thanks always to our Board Up team at KPFA. And we will reconvene next week with wonderful Hawaiian musician Makana and his great Songs for Democracy and Ode to Bernie. Thanks again, John.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Everybody have a great day.
This is Philip Muldery, host of The Sunday Show. Join me and my guests every Sunday morning, 9 to 11. We'll be talking about politics. We'll be talking about the state of things around us. Plus, we open the phones to your called-in questions and comments. That's every Sunday morning, The Sunday Show, on community-powered KPFA.
KPFA Community Advisory Board invites community journalists, activists, writers, artists, musicians, as well as KPFA programmers, staff, volunteers, and listeners from throughout the KPFA signal range for a lively exchange about our beloved station, KPFA. Are you interested in speaking with KPFA programmers and staff and sharing ideas, conversations, and proposals about how KPFA and KPFA.org can best address the issues that you and your organizations care about? If so, you are invited to attend the KPFA Community Advisory Board's Community Input Meeting, Saturday, March 26, 2 to 4 p.m. in the meeting room at the Taria Hall Pittman, South Berkeley Public Library, 1901 Russell Street, Berkeley, California. For more information, go to kpfa.org.
And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. The time is just about 3 p.m. Stay tuned next for Cover to Cover with Richard.